Good? Okay. Welcome, everyone, to the Borough Roosevelt Council meeting of January 17th, 2023. It is 7:05 p.m. Adequate notice of this meeting, as required by Chapter 231, PL 1975, has been provided by a public notice on December 30th, 2022, which was posted on the bulletin board in the Roosevelt Post Office and in the Borough Hall. The notice was published in the Times and the Asbury Park Press. Roll call.
Mr. Robert Atwood.
Here.
Mr. Lou Esikoff is absent. Mr. Michael Hamilton.
Here.
Ms. Constance Hirstrom.
Here.
Mr. Stephen Mocker.
Here.
Mr. Joseph Trammell.
Here.
Mayor Peggy Mell.
Here. Okay. Well, in lieu of a report, we have a few things to discuss, so I'll just give my information later on.
Okay.
Good evening, Councilmember Esikoff.
You probably
change it.
That you arrived at 7:06 p.m.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
How you doing, Lou?
As bad as I could possibly be.
Okay,
I'm going to open the floor for public comments on agenda items only.
At 7:06.
Thank you. It's not showing up. No. At 7:06 p.m., would someone like to come up? So the first thing is that you identify yourself, say your name and your address, and then you can.
Claire Burkhart, 14 Tamara Drive. I was the one who wrote the letter, so I'm just here to read it.
Is her mic on, Joe?
Should be.
Turned
it all the way up.
I wrote to the Borough Council to express my opposition to installation of new speed humps and to suggest possible alternatives. As a public health professional, I do not dispute claims that speed humps can reduce pedestrian injuries and deaths due to speeding. In a 2004 study published in the American Journal of Public Health, researchers found that speed humps were associated with lower odds of children being injured within their neighborhood and being struck in front of their home. I also do not want to diminish the concern of residents who have personal experience with vehicle on pedestrian accidents and the health issues that follow. Excuse me. I do believe, however, that there are alternatives that should be explored before action is taken. My objection to speed humps are largely twofold. First is the impact on emergency vehicle response time and ability to provide care. And second is the negative impact on residents with musculoskeletal and other disabilities. When it comes to health and fire-related emergency response, I believe most of us can agree that response time is critical to improve outcomes. However, both emergency responders and academic researchers suggest that speed bumps and humps negatively affect response time. According to a 2007 report from the Institute of Transportation Engineers, there is an approximate delay of between 3 and 5 seconds per hump for fire trucks and up to 10 seconds for ambulances with a patient. In an interview with Fire Marshal Carola Hanks of the Durango Fire Protection District in Durango, Colorado, he stated that going too fast over a speed hump can damage a fire engine's equipment, and that due to the size and weight of fire trucks, they take longer to slow down and then reaccelerate when encountering humps. He also stated that speed humps both hinder ambulance speeds to and from a site and impact patient care once they have been loaded onto the ambulance. For example, speed humps hinder attempts by paramedics to start an IV line or intubate a patient. Speed humps can also cause unsecured items or even items in paramedics' hands to go flying. According to Professor, and I have no idea how to pronounce this name, Katarzyna Kosakowska, experiments found that driving over a speed bump at 15 miles per hour both caused objects to become airborne and had a significant impact on the physical health and well-being of patients, particularly those with fractures or spinal injuries. Even at a speed of 10 miles per hour, spinal injuries could be exacerbated. Speed humps can also have a negative effect on the well-being of both temporarily and permanently disabled residents, especially those with musculoskeletal issues. This is a topic that is near to my heart, as my mother suffers from severe spinal issues, and even after multiple spinal rods and other surgeries, she still has trouble walking and has severe pain that can be exacerbated by potholes and other bumps in the road. This experience is echoed across many case studies and reports of pain and or injury caused by speed humps. For example, Emily Wilcox, a resident of Berkeley, California, who successfully campaigned to enact a moratorium against future installation of speed humps in her town, reported that due to a genetic spinal deformity, she finds driving over speed humps at any speed to be painful. In her campaign against speed humps, she also pointed out that vertical deflection traffic calming devices are typically designed to generate loadings of 0.69 G on road users. U.S. government publications, however, recommend 0.3 G as a high maximum for wheelchair users. Another U.S. example of harm caused by speed humps is Courtney Wickard, who suffers from osteogenesis imperfecta, a genetic bone defect. Both her arms and spine were fractured when a school bus she was in hit a speed bump. While extreme, these cases are not isolated. One case study published in the American Journal of Emergency Medicine looked at four incidents of individuals with severe spinal pain after riding over a speed bump in a bus. In all four cases, compression fractures of at least one vertebrae were found. Finally, some drivers of paratransit vehicles have been warned to avoid driving over obstacles such as curbs or potholes because of the potential to dislodge the patient and or wheelchair. All in all, evidence suggests that road humps can, at a minimum, decrease the quality of life of individuals with musculoskeletal disabilities and or injuries, and in some cases cause active harm. I would also like to briefly mention a few additional items to take into consideration when discussing traffic humps. According to research from the UK National Institute for Health and Care Excellence, speed humps are environmentally unfriendly as they cause drivers to speed up and then slow down between humps, contributing more to air pollution than if they were driving smoothly. Another more recent study suggests that the metal particles released by car brake pads when navigating obstacles can have the same harmful effects on our health as diesel exhaust fumes do. I would also suggest that drivers who wish to avoid the personal discomfort and or wear and tear on their car caused by speed humps may become distracted or drive erratically while trying to find the best spot at which to cross over. There have also been reports of pedestrians and cyclists being injured by falls caused by improperly signed and or maintained speed humps. Finally, in describing the rationale behind speed hump bans, county and city officials in many jurisdictions, such as Nassau County, Florida, have stated that, quote, courts have held public agencies liable for personal injuries resulting from faulty design. Because speed bumps have considerable potential for liability suits, many officials have rejected them as a standard traffic control device on public streets. Due to the above stated reasons, I oppose the installation of speed humps and or humps on Roosevelt's residential roads. However, I also agree that pedestrian safety is important and believe there are options that the borough might consider. Such options include adding lines to the road to indicate biking and or walking lanes, as well as conducting traffic studies to see if sidewalks might be installed in areas where drivers are most likely to speed. Installation of speed tables in lieu of speed humps might also be an option. Speed tables are long, raised speed humps with a flat section in the middle and ramps on the ends. These have been found to reduce speed to approximately 25 miles per hour and to reduce collisions by 45%. They are also preferred by fire departments if a traffic calming hump is needed, as they generally cause less than 3 seconds of delay per hump. Finally, if speed humps are deemed necessary, I can encourage considering the latest research on shape, height, and degree of incline to minimize impacts on residents' health and safety. Thank you for your time, and I do have citations at home if you are interested.
Thank you very much.
So I think we should save this for later on for unfinished business because I did speak to the Millstone Fire Department to get their opinion since I don't think any of us are experts on this. So we can finish the public portion, and then when we get to unfinished business, I can tell you what I spoke to Millstone about.
I also have some interesting information for you.
Okay.
Personally experienced.
Is there anyone else from the public who would like to speak about it? Anything on the agenda? Okay, I'm going to close the public portion at 7:15.
Are you going to give opportunity for just anything?
Yes, okay. Absolutely. At the end, near the end of the meeting.
Okay.
At
around 10 o'clock.
At which point we're serving late night.
When we coffee over there.
I was going to say, tough point.
Mayor, can we rearrange the order of business so people don't have to slog through a whole business meeting?
It's fine with me.
I'd like to make a motion to rearrange the order of business to allow the public to speak about items that are not on the agenda.
Yeah, the second portion.
Yeah.
Second?
Sure. Second.
All in favor?
Second.
Aye.
Okay, would you like to come to that?
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Just name and address.
Yes.
Celeste Zimmerman, 14 North Valley Road, Roosevelt, New Jersey, 08555.
Oh, you're the town yard sale woman.
Yes. Probably never again, but anyway, side note.
Wait a second. I'm really sorry. We had a first and a second. Did we all do it
yeah.
all in favor?
Oh,
sorry.
Yeah.
We
did.
Yeah.
Where was I?
The
I'm like, wait, I didn't even say
it's Tuesday. We're all thrown off. We're not supposed
we
to be here on a Tuesday.
No speed bumps.
Take my chair. Take
that. Sorry about that.
Yeah, I think that one day throws everybody off because our meetings are Mondays.
Okay. And thank you, Michael Hamilton, for revising the schedule. So basically, I'm recently retired, a little over a year now, and I walk the town every day, and I notice there's many seniors, and my mother, being a senior that lives in Hamilton, New Jersey, has privy to senior centers, and I don't think that Roosevelt has a senior center program. We do?
We sort of do, yeah.
Oh. Okay. Then maybe you can educate me, because I'm not familiar with it, but that's what I'm here about, because I, like, just through the grapevine, I heard that there was a program, and then it stopped during the pandemic.
Exactly right.
And it
and
never
started. They've been reluctant to meet again, because it's still, you know, obviously the pandemic is still in kind of full throttle.
But it was very, they were very active.
They're very active. And then what about, is the public invited to the Solar Village things for there?
Sure.
Yeah, so it's twofold. We do have a senior, like a club, and they would meet once a month, and they were very active until COVID.
Right.
And
okay.
So they've been reluctant to meet again. Like, I think they will. We do have large number of seniors in town. In fact, probably.
Exactly.
Until recently, I don't know about since the pandemic when a lot of new people moved in, but until recently, the majority of people here were seniors. So there is the senior club, which I would imagine will start again. But then, you know where Solar Village is at the end?
Absolutely. Do I go there once a week?
So that's mostly a senior's.
But they don't do activities.
Well, we have two people here on the board of...
Three.
Oh, Mike. Well, I was thinking of the council. Can you enlighten Celeste? Are there...
Michael probably can.
The manager company has program for the residents. Is that really...
That's what I said. Are other people allowed to join?
Other people.
Well, did the senior club meet here at Borough Hall before?
Yeah, Borough Hall.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah.
So when you have events in the community room, Solar Village, no one else can join?
We haven't really had any events.
Yeah, see, everything's kind of stopped.
No,
nothing's stopped.
But
we'll...
I don't think we'd kick anyone.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Members of the organization, so
people
can be members of the organization.
That's what I mean. They would welcome your mother?
No, I'm not looking for my mother. No, my mother is
in
Hamilton Township, and that's one of the reasons I'm here to advocate for a senior center for our town, because she has many benefits through that. Now, in Hamilton, they have a program where you could have lunch. You know, when the pandemic started, then people would drive through. But my thing whoever I could contact about the senior program that was held here, and how can we get it up and running again?
They're not in favor of it yet. They're reluctant to come back and meet in person.
Because I walk in town and I come across many, many seniors, and I am often walking by when everybody's coming to the Tai Chi, and that parking lot is full. And I talk to the seniors in the parking lot, and they're like, I told them I planned on coming to a council meeting inquiring about a senior program for the seniors in Roosevelt. And they all were like, oh, my gosh, that would be great. That would be wonderful. So, you know, many, many people say things on sidelines, but then they don't come to the forefront to the meetings.
Well, the teacher, the Tai Chi teacher, she
June
used to come. Yeah, I mean, yes. She came to the seniors meeting. She knows all about it. But we're being told that no one wants to come. We've inquired a few times, and they're not ready to come back in person.
Okay.
I know.
Is there a precedent?
It was Jerry Millar. I don't think she would be president now. But and then we have, who's the council rep to the seniors? Well, because we haven't kept up with it because of the pandemic. Tai Chi there's really only about four people who come to Tai Chi, and I know one of them doesn't live in town, which still wouldn't preclude her from, because Millstone and Roosevelt often join the seniors. Like, the seniors from Roosevelt are welcome to go to the Millstone senior when they have their meetings, and vice versa, the Millstone residents are welcome to come here, and frequently do. And they had lunch. They used to go on trips to see plays.
And they have people speaking.
They have speakers come. They have nurses come and do blood pressure checks.
So how do we get it up? I mean, I'm not quite a senior yet, but I will be someday. So that's why I figure I'm a little early to get the wheels turning. But just another side note, I did call Millstone Township, and they meet like once a month, and they do mostly volunteer work. So my inquiry is, and that's great to know that we can, you know, work with Millstone, because now that we're with their fire department, why can't we become more of a community? But hence, our children go to the East Windsor School District. So has that ever been explored, to tap into the East Windsor Senior Center? Because I know it's much larger and they do much more activities than what I'm understanding that Roosevelt or Millstone does. And Monroe has a phenomenal program.
Well, is driving an obstacle for, I mean, to most of the seniors, I don't know if they could actually drive to Monroe or East Windsor. It's, you know, unless they're...
That's what I'm asking. Like, has the council ever looked into hooking up with the East Windsor Senior Center?
No, because we had our own thriving senior club here, so it's only since the pandemic that everything came to
a
halt.
It was very viable, really. It was very
It was really lovely, and we have asked quite a few times, and we just keep being told they're not ready yet.
New COVID variant around,
exactly,
it's a high risk population.
Right. Every time we're ready to Every time we're ready to sort of like start again, there's a new variant, and they're telling now this last one, this XXB something, this is supposed to be the most contagious of all. And so I do think that East Windsor, because we even had buses that took the seniors to ShopRite, because driving is an obstacle to get to East Windsor and Monroe.
Okay.
Just a side note and a plug, Roosevelt Arts Project has a monthly event that we tend to see the same faces. I don't see many new faces in terms of seniors. Last Saturday we had a storytelling event that was we do have song, poetry, singers. I'm not, so there are other events that are open to any age and anybody.
Well, if I can interject, I think Celeste was looking for things around here more
of course.
Towards seniors.
Well, that's the thing about Roosevelt. Not everybody's all into the arts scene. Not everybody's always into the environmental. People have different interests. It's more like, having somewhere to go possibly on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. Say you want to have lunch with somebody, seeing new faces, meeting other people.
Right,
having that availability more than once a month.
It couldn't be every day here anyway.
That's why I was asking about tapping into East Windsor.
Yeah, I
senior. And but that's interesting about the driving. I mean, I see a lot of seniors out there driving, but I'm not here to debate, and I had a feeling it would kind of be squashed like a bug.
Well, no. I mean, we're not, you know. It's just that we do have a senior program, which, as you know, we told you was really thriving, but the virus put the kibosh on that.
We don't know who she could talk to.
Well, that's it. And I know that Monroe is back up and running, and East Windsor is back and up and running, and they're no longer getting their meals through a drive-through. They are going to the program, you know, so that's very interesting, you know.
Well,
that
I think the way they worked meals here was that they would order subs or different, and then someone would pick them up.
But I mean, it's interesting that Roosevelt is so reluctant to meet again.
You're not reluctant, that you know. The seniors are.
Well, no, I know. I understand what
you're
saying.
See, there's seniors, say this delicately, there's seniors and there's seniors. Like, if you're over 62, you could be a senior, but then if you're in your 90s or, you know, it's a little, except for Lou.
Springtime, but I mean, it is more of an obstacle to drive.
Lou's maybe not an exception, but he is.
I mean, I don't know who ran the seniors before.
Well, they had a president. Yeah, they had a president, a vice president, and, you know, and we keep checking.
You check with the president and the vice president?
Well, they may have, you know, I don't know, because they stopped for almost 3 years, I don't know if it's, if they consider the same president and vice president, you know, because
well,
it really...
Who was the president, Lou?
Jerry Millar was there.
Oh, Jerry, okay.
Yeah. And who was vice? I think maybe Karen Block, but she moved.
She moved.
Well, would Anna know who... if she talked, called Anna, would she get, couldn't she get a phone number of somebody to contact?
Anna knows. Well, Jerry... Good try.
Jerry
seems like a lot of unknown.
Yeah. Well, because we do keep checking, and we're
we ask June, we ask Jerry,
you know, and they're like, no, not yet. We don't want to come back yet. In fact, we even wanted them to come for a Christmas party, like have a little Christmas celebration. They didn't want to. All right. Does someone want to? Who's community development? Someone want to? Call East Windsor? I mean, I don't know that the driving would be an issue, but
see, when you see the driving, technically you're a senior when you're 62. And I feel like most people are continuing to drive from 62 well on into 80.
Yeah, because most of our seniors aren't 62.
They might not have cars either.
Yeah.
You know, I get the East Windsor
information.
Pardon me?
The Windsor Heights Herald?
No, I get it on my computer. I get the monthly, weekly, whatever. I get the impression that they don't deal with anybody else.
They don't. I didn't want to.
Well, yes. I know that because I call it. Trust me, I do all my homework before I come and present
to
when I come to a roadblock. Right. Monroe is for Monroe. East Windsor is for East Windsor and Hightstown.
Right.
But what I'm saying is we were obviously able to tap into Millstone for fire services. We were. Obviously, we've been tapping into East Windsor for our kids for school. So what would we have to do in order to be able to tap into East Windsor for their senior center?
Like you said, because it's out of county.
What I can tell you, Monroe is out of county. East Windsor and Hightstown are out of county. Millstone is the natural choice for our first responders because they're 3 minutes away, same county, same... I don't think anything in East Windsor gets done comes to fruition without the approval of the mayor.
Okay.
The mayor is generally very reluctant to join with anyone else. We've tried in the past, but if someone wants to make
our kids go to East Windsor School District?
That's been set up for many, many, many years.
Yeah, and I understand that, but I was just wondering, is there
that's the only sort of shared service that we have is education.
Out of county.
Right. I mean with East Windsor.
Right, yes.
Which is out of county.
Right.
And that's been replaced. I came in 74 and everyone already. I know someone in their 90s, Roosevelt used to go to Allentown.
Okay.
But it hasn't been that way for forever. Forever. I couldn't even tell you how long it's been since they go to East Windsor, but that's the only sort of sharing that we do with East Windsor.
Well, that's not even the borough, that's the school.
Right, that's right. It has, in a way, it has nothing to do with us personally here. It's that's how it's set up with, by the state.
Okay.
But, you know, I mean, I understand your interest and your concern. You know, we can ask them again. I do think maybe in the spring, because I would think now in the winter with this most recent, and what I had been reading is that the people who are, I read that the people who are most susceptible to this new variant are people that are vaccinated. So there might still be some reluctance to come back, but I can, you know, I can find out. We can ask some, you know. Ask a little bit.
Do we know who has a list of all the senior citizens?
Since COVID, some of them who were regulars have moved. Some have died. Like, there's been a lot of changes in almost 3 years. So we
and
have
some
a list.
Some of them are not well enough to come.
And some of them aren't well enough to come anymore. So we do have a list.
Difficulty for them.
And we can look at it and see who we can contact, who's still, you know, a viable person to contact.
And is it 62 and over?
I mean, we weren't strict about it.
No, it didn't matter.
If you were 58 and you wanted to come,
we're
not that strict about anything.
And if you're hobbled in, then it's okay.
Right. Up to 100.
Put me on that list, Connie. I'm 58, so.
Okay. Good.
No, I just think, you know, it's really proven. I mean, you know. It helps with mental health.
Oh, but, we know.
You know, it's just, you know, to get together with others.
Sure.
And,
Lou said, we had a very viable senior for, I don't know, I started here at the table 18 years ago, and I was the senior rep that was, and half the time when I would call them to see about different things, but, oh, no, well, we have this for this month, and we have that for next month, maybe in 4 months, because I'd, like, have a nurse to come in and do blood pressure or talk to them about keeping your home safe, you know, for falls and things like that. And every time I talked to them, they were like, no, we can't do it next month because we're doing this. We can't do it the month after. Well, can you schedule it? Yeah, they were really busy.
That's interesting.
It was very.
We only meet once a month?
Once a month.
And when they met, I would always see 10 or 20 people in here. There would always be like.
Yes.
And it smelled great because they had lunch and they had.
I see. Okay.
But it just, everything changed with the beginning of the pandemic.
Celeste, you're right. It's really important for seniors and for everybody to have contact with other people and to remember how it is to socialize.
Yes.
And it's very difficult now with that new variant, and it's very contagious. And I think, there's a lot of reluctance to do that. We had a lot of reluctance to get away from Zoom and out of the box.
Yeah, you know, get here. Yeah, we were one of the last ones.
Still a little reluctant, you know, but we're here. It was a very active group. I remember going to a couple Christmas parties back when I was mayor. And it was great. There must have been 40 or 50 people in the room.
Wow.
And
wow.
It was active. There was singing. There was all kinds of things.
Because we do. We have a large senior population here. And Roosevelt,
also.
You must know, is a close-knit community anyway.
Oh, yes.
So we all pretty much know each other and look out for each other. And, it stopped with the lockdown. And
okay.
Are there meetings still going on? Are they doing things at Solar Village now or not? That's
we have actually been having the meetings at the room, so we do all the meetings for remotely.
Oh, okay.
It just works better that way.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, we can look at the list and see
and
who's still lives here,
know.
Who's in good health, who's, you know, and see and make some calls,
because the program could even help for the people that don't want to come, because maybe we could drop off something to them, the people that can't come because they're that ill. You know, maybe there's a way if we met, well, you said that they would buy lunch.
Oh.
Maybe you bring your, if you know somebody is so elderly that they can't get out of bed or they don't want to leave their house,
right.
You know, maybe that helps the word spread by people meeting, you know. Oh, I know so-and-so and so-and-so is really not feeling well. Oh, well, let's all...
Well, we kind of do that, but not officially. When the word gets out, everyone rallies around.
So we have Meals on Wheels.
Yeah. Right.
And the scat buses.
Was there money for this program?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's
from
money.
The council.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to remember, you know, the town gets the town gets younger by the day. People buying homes.
That's interesting. No, I mean hearing that. I'm sorry.
No, we have people who, you know, people die, people move.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And yet generally, the houses, when the house just flips over, it flips over to a younger person who is not interested.
Mm-hmm. True.
The town's gotten much younger. I can remember on Farm Lane alone, on one side of the road, for that matter, where, remember, Naroditsky and that group?
Yeah.
It must have been 5 or 6 senior citizen housing there. Right there isn't that many in the whole street now.
Mm. So Connie, you want to call East Windsor? And then I'll look at the list of who was in our senior club and see if there's anyone that we could contact and ask again. You know, we have been asking. Yeah. Not for long. I guess we started asking.
Jerry Mahar was the last one.
Yeah. No, I know it was Jerry, but I'm just wondering. I think we started asking maybe like last summer of 21, if they wanted to meet again, and we didn't.
I know, and I believe East Windsor is opened up again, in-person program.
Yes.
Whether East Windsor would accept Roosevelt, that's a whole other... Right.
Well, that's interesting to know. I'm glad Connie brought that up about there is a budget, because I don't know if that budget would be enough to try to weasel our way into East Windsor. I mean, I know there's the county division, but money talks very often, you know, and maybe if they knew we had money to bring to the table, they would let us in.
Did we budget for that this year? We may not even have budgeted because it's been defunct for 3 years.
I think it's in.
Okay. It may be the same idea of the library system. A couple of times, I know we have advocated for us to use
Mercer
County Light, especially Twin Rivers.
We were permitted to forever, and then one
and
day
they shut it off because taxes go for county.
Right.
I know. We got the Hightstown one
on the lake. Yeah. We all used that library, and then one day, no more.
Where do the seniors pay on these $25
$75 a month?
What is the road? But it's behind like the Target area.
It's like a little mound between Target and
The Municipal Center back there.
Yeah.
Yes.
Between Target and Panera.
Yeah.
Okay. Right
back. Yeah.
Well, I'll look at our list.
Okay. All right. Thank you for listening.
See who we can call. And, you know, Connie will contact East Windsor. Okay. And
thanks, Celeste.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Jeff.
Get a petition.
Thank you all.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Does anyone else from the public want to speak about anything else? Mm-hmm. All right, I'm going to close the public portion at 7:38. Where are we? Okay, correspondence. We have a letter that we received from Roberts Engineering regarding trickling filter evaluation. And then we have the letter from Claire Burkhart regarding speed humps. We'll come to minutes. We have the regular meeting minutes of December 12th, 2022.
So moved.
Okay. Second?
I'll second it.
Okay. Any discussion? No. Roll call.
Mr. Atwood?
Yes.
Mr. Esikoff?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Ms. Hertzstrom?
Yes.
Mr. Mocker?
Yes.
And Mr. Tremell?
Yes.
Okay. Minutes are adopted. Come to the consent agenda resolutions. We have two resolutions, 23-30, payment of bills for January 17th, 2023. And Resolution 23-31, Resolution amending Resolution 22-113.
Move to approve.
Can we do those separately?
Well, can I comment on 22-113?
So we should do it separately.
Wait.
Okay.
23-31.
Get it right, Joe.
Come on. 23-31. I'm looking at
it. First to 22.
2-113.
Yeah, right. The amendment.
Right. Okay.
So Robert's rules give you only 2 shots at it.
I'm starting to read that book now. I am. Yeah.
Okay. You missed your shot, Joe.
Okay.
Okay. No, go ahead.
We approved $10,000 to have them go into the earth to see how the foundation was for the trickling filter thing. So there's a second part of that that was another $2,500, so it puts us over the $10,000 that was allocated. So I think we should just go ahead. There should be no problem with that.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So.
Okay.
Mike, did you want to say something too?
Yeah, I was just going to ask if we could separate the two rather than do them as a bundle, because I'm going to need to abstain on the bills list because it's the first time I'm looking at it. I didn't really look at it, so I don't want to abstain on
for
both
of them.
Yeah. So that's
okay.
Okay. So I need a motion.
I'll make a motion to separate the two and put on.
To pull, each so we'll put 2330.
Pull
from the
yeah.
consent agenda.
Okay.
And I need a second.
Second. I
got you.
No, I'll do a roll call.
Okay.
Mr. Atwood?
Yes.
Mr. Esikoff?
Yes.
Mr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Ms. Hertstrom?
Yes.
Mr. Mocker?
Yes.
And Mr. Trammell?
Yes.
Okay, so 23-30, payment of bills for January 17, 2023, has been pulled from the consent agenda. So now, under the consent agenda, is just Resolution 23-31, which is Resolution Amending Resolution 22-113.
So moved.
Second. Okay.
Joe, second. Okay.
Roll call.
Mr. Atwood?
Yes.
Mr. Esikoff?
Yes.
Mr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Ms. Hertstrom?
Yes.
Mr. Mocker?
Yes.
And Mr. Trammell?
Yes.
Okay, so now we're back to Resolution 23-30.
Do I have a motion?
Okay.
So move.
Okay. Second?
Okay.
Okay. Roll call.
Mr. Atwood?
Yes.
Mr. Esikoff?
Yes.
Mr. Hamilton?
Abstain.
Ms. Hertstrom?
Yes.
Mr. Mocker?
Yes.
And Mr. Trammell?
Yes.
Okay. Resolutions 23-30 and 23-31 have been adopted. Committee chairs, Councilmember Atwood, Environmental Health and Safety.
Nothing new.
Councilmember Esikoff, Administration.
Everything is okay.
Okay. Councilmember Hamilton, Finance.
Well, there's really nothing to discuss under Finance right now, but there will be sometime soon. I did want to discuss something about under Environmental Health and Safety, but I don't know where you want to do that.
I guess borough officials.
Okay.
Councilmember Hertstrom, Community Development Code Enforcement.
Okay. We were able to have our project for the amphitheater committee. We were able to send out the list for architects, the request for proposals, and we had a lot of help from Kathleen, Anna, others that I want to thank. You know, for help for getting it done. And our next project is to come up with objectives for the selection of the consultant as the packages come back in, which are expected on the 16th of February at 2 o'clock for us to open them here. And we're hoping for lots of things to come in. We had a one person who was at the Society for American Society for Landscape Architects, a contact there who was putting it out to everyone on their list. So we're hoping we'll get a whole lot more names, you know, from that. Otherwise, we probably sent out to about 22.
Okay. Thank you.
Connie?
Yes.
Did you want to mention that we also have a new member?
Yes, we do have a new member, you know, for the committee, and that is Ellen Silverman. And she has already put forward a few things that she wanted to mention that we'll try to incorporate into a later stage in terms of an objective as well. And she had a name of someone that she was contacting, which will go on our master list for who things went out to.
You have a little mini farm there that Ellen will make.
Yeah.
I'd just just want to compliment Connie on the presentation,
the RFP.
Mm-hmm. That was very comprehensive and very good.
And it's moving along nicely, it seems.
Yeah.
And timely.
I just want to say it's a great committee, and it's composed of various stakeholders from, you know, all the different agencies and groups who have a vested interest in it. Yeah. And they work. We're working very well together. We're really on a tight timeline. It's being run in a very efficient and effective manner, thanks to Connie. And it's really great to be part of that and to have, you know, everybody.
Yeah, she's hiding her whip now.
Yeah. A lot of different people with a lot of different perspectives. And and we have high hopes.
It's nice to see different parts of Roosevelt come together for the common good of Roosevelt. It makes makes a nice difference here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Councilmember Mocker, Public Works.
Nothing to report. I think our Public Works has been sick for a couple weeks, so not much has happened.
That's good, actually, in a way.
What, that it's been sick?
No, I mean that nothing, you know, nothing's happened, no emergencies.
No snowstorms.
Right, no emergencies, no, you know, it's quiet. Councilmember Trammell, Utilities?
I don't really have anything for utilities except for some water situations in town here, and I have a feeling that Mike is going to speak on that.
It's one of our favorite topics.
Oh, okay. God.
Beavers.
Beavers, yes. There is a beaver situation in town, and people have been notified through the state, the county, and the Assinpink, and then Mike picks it up from here. Okay.
But that's for...
Yeah, okay, so we'll...
That's for new business.
Going to down for none.
Yeah.
Okay, none.
All right, reports of borough officials. Do you want to go, Michael, first? Okay.
Okay, I just thought... Michael Tickton, 37 North Valley Road. I just thought I'd like to make... to point something out in my capacity as historian. I just did an article for the Borough Bulletin, which you might, when it finally comes out, hopefully you'll find interesting, that our population on the last census is 808. We've lost about, since the 2000 census, which was our high point of 915, we have lost about 13% of our population.
It's about 833.
Houses for sale at this point, almost every.
No, they're not, right? I think what it is just, you know, people are staying in their houses, and people are, you know, kids are going off to off and not coming back, and you know, people.
Like sometimes there's so many houses for sale, and right now.
No, now they're not. No, they're not a lot of houses for sale at all. Right.
I would have thought our population increased.
No, it's just interesting. Which is you have an average now of 2.4 people per household, which is the lowest that it's ever been.
I mean, I don't think that's completely accurate because I do know some people who never answered the door for the census or filled it out because I've seen the census people come and knock on their doors trying to.
Okay, well, I don't know.
So it's probably a bit low. I know one family where there's four of them and they haven't responded.
Well,
you know, there's a national trend for children, adult children, to stay at home these days and live with the parents.
Yeah, it's just interesting. It's just I just thought you'd find that interesting.
There's adult children living in town.
Go to the West Coast.
Yeah, there's adult children living in town, for sure.
Yeah, interesting. Millstone, which had been fastest growing municipality in the state a couple of censuses ago, had actually a very slight negative growth.
I just would love to know what the true population is, because I know that there are people who haven't responded.
Well, yeah, but that's going to be, that probably is a constant, there are probably going
to
be some people who do that anytime,
the
trend is probably, it's not something unusual that it's that's happening. Just, I thought it was interesting to bring it to your attention.
We're in line with China, then.
Right.
Exactly. Different reasons, right?
So people ask me, I always say 833. That was the 2010
census. It was 882.
Oh, 882.
Yeah, I always said 900.
Right. Yeah, 882. Yeah. So it's now I say it's about 800, which is...
Will this affect us with aid of any sort?
I'm sorry?
Will this affect anything?
Not that I know of.
Financially?
Not that I know of.
Other than students for the school.
Well, another fact which might be of some interest now, Walpac is now the smallest municipality in the state with six people.
Oh, I thought it was Teterboro.
Tavistock. Tavistock, but Tavistock had an 80% population increase going from 5 to 9.
Because I went, I had read
like rabbits in Tavistock.
Right.
Yeah, I had read that Teterboro was 7.
Teterboro is a little more than that. Yeah. Teterboro is a little
depends
more.
On how many planes are on the ground.
Right, yeah, right. Whatever. Okay, good.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks,
Mike.
Okay,
thank you. All right, Mike. Beavers.
Beavers. That seems like it's one of our favorite discussions. Beavers. Speed bumps.
Yeah.
We talk a lot about beavers and speed bumps these days. But since our last discussion, I reached out to, I talked to Henry John Alder, who's a professor at Rutgers in environmental sciences, and he reached out to Peter Winkler, and Peter reached out to me.
Peter's DEP from Assinpink.
He's DEP from Assinpink, and then he sent it along this best practices thing regarding beavers and all. I haven't had a chance to really look through it, but since our last discussion, I've learned a lot about beavers and habitat and what they do and all of that. And I found it kind of fascinating because I never really thought much about it. I mean, to me, without a lot of knowledge, and I admit I was pretty ignorant about beavers and how they affect the ecosystem, I just saw them as, you know, cutting down trees and flooding my backyard and all kinds of other problems, but I didn't look at it deeper, and now that I have them, I'm changing my mind about them. They're considered a keystone species. A keystone species is an organism that helps hold an ecosystem together. Mm-hmm. They're crucial. Without that, ecosystems tend to fall apart and change. Mm-hmm. And if you look up keystone species, first thing you come up with is beaver. That is one of the main keystone species in the whole ecosystem. They're critical to the survival of other species in the system and the system itself.
Is that an aquatic system, Mike, or just in general?
No, in general, in terms of the
total
entire
environment.
Ecosystem.
Yeah, they're here to frighten the mayor.
What's that?
They're here to frighten the mayor.
Yeah.
The mayor's dog.
Scare the daylights out of them. Yeah. I don't think I ever screamed in Roosevelt before.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, you did, but nobody heard it.
Well, as the climate warms, apparently, beavers cool the water. And they also help cool areas that tend to overheat, and we have a problem with overheating in the environment right now. They've done measurements, and there are studies that show that an area that's flooded by beaver dams, and those areas tend to run about 4 degrees cooler in the summer than other areas do, because when they dam up the water gets deeper. Deeper water is cooler at the bottom. Deep water like that, when it's obstructed, causes air to flow over it, and it cools. It's evaporative cooling. The same thing, you know, if you like are wet and go outside on a hot day, you feel a lot cooler because the water's evaporating from your skin. I didn't realize that they had those effects. It also helps to fill the aquifers, because if the water's standing still and it's dammed up, it perks into the ground and fills the aquifers. So, little did I know a lot of these things. The reason that they cut down trees is not only to eat, but to build a safe environment for them. If you've ever watched a beaver run, or try to run, they've been compared to a bag of chicken nuggets with a big floppy tail that drags on the ground.
Yep.
And that's kind of how they move. They kind of
waddle.
They waddle and they go this way and that way, and they're not very good on the ground. But
they
when they're in the water...
They're really good in the water, yeah.
Oh, my God.
They have a paddle.
Yeah. I know a lot of us have been watching them over this whole adult. I mean, you just go there and you watch them, and they go underneath. They submerge for... I had one, I timed about 8 minutes. He submerged. He was distressed. He slapped the water.
Over on the bike pit?
Yeah. Slapped the water, and he submerged. I couldn't see where he went. Mm-hmm. And then he reemerged way downstream.
So he got there quickly.
So if I was a predator, I would have been either bored and off to find some other prey, figuring that one got away,
yeah,
or not known where to stalk them at. So I was pretty impressed with their ability to, you know, to escape predators and all. And that's why they flood areas. It's a survival thing. Yeah. If they have more flooded areas, they have more habitat that they can feel safe in. And we have foxes that hunt. Beavers, and I mean,
coyotes.
We've all seen,
yeah,
foxes around. Yeah, I haven't seen them, but I hear them every now and then. Sometimes
the coyotes.
Yeah, coyotes.
Seen them in the backyard, yeah.
But they build safe habitats for themselves. So, yeah, I've learned a lot about, a lot more than I ever thought I would about beavers and habitat. They are good. They actually, with the deeper water, you tend to start getting fish and other species settling in, mm-hmm, to that environment. And even though it's a really messy ecosystem, when you look out and you see all these flooded areas and all, it's actually a very stable kind of ecosystem. It looks like a total mess, but it's what they call a complex riverscape, which is very resilient to climate change. It's, it actually helps if there's a wildfire, too, because it floods the area. It gives a habitat for other animals that are affected. They can go down in that area, and they're safe. In California, they just passed legislation banning the state, or requiring the state, if they get involved with beaver issues, that they have to relocate them. Because they're a keystone species, they're integral to the environment.
We had
a big discussion at the last meeting.
That's not what I
was. And I was adamant about, we've got to do something about them.
Yard.
But
yeah.
Now I'm thinking we need to move carefully with it because, right, you know, it's a complex kind of thing, their interaction with the environment, and we could end up doing more damage than we bargained for if we remove them, if we. And I think the people who were in contact with and some of Peter Winkler's people, they don't trap or relocate. I think they harvest, which to me is a code word for, you know, they kill them.
Pelts. They sell the pelts, right.
So we may want to rethink it or send it to committee and take a look at what, you know, maybe some better way of handling the problem.
And by the way, they tend to stay only a certain period of time, and then they move along. They don't stay forever.
Yeah, because there weren't periods where it wasn't an issue. They didn't see them, the trees
weren't
being
cut down. They have a tendency to move.
Now, Mary Tullis texted me, and she said they mate for life.
Yeah.
They mate for life.
If you remove one, you should remove the couple. But we've seen three over on the bike path. Off the bike path. So
I've talked to people that
I don't
have
know
seen
if they have an open relationship or whatever over there.
No, they have to wear wedding bands, and then we know exactly
who
the couples
are. All right, well, since I brought this up at the last meeting, because there were complaints, you included, about the water in the backyards and stuff. So I get in touch with the state. They put me in touch with Winkler, who got in touch with the beaver trapper. Okay.
Brandon.
Yes, Brandon Beavers, I call him. So he will be here this coming week. So if we're going to talk to
him.
But
again, isn't he the one who's going to
try to remove them?
He's the trapper, yeah.
Oh, he's the trapper.
Well, yeah, he removes them. He traps them.
What does he?
Right, so you have his number now, but now there's two different issues here. One is the Assinpink, which is the state, and they have an interest in keeping the population under control as well as the water flowing, and that is an issue for us because we don't want the water to rise above the effluent from the wastewater plant, from the sewer plant.
Yeah, and the way I'm looking at it is the beavers aren't the problem, the flooding is.
Well,
and he mentioned to me that part of that stream is Roosevelt's problem.
Right.
It's our stream to address
right.
if there's any blockages or whatever.
Right.
We need to find a way to get out there. And then it goes to Millstone from there. So
Well, it comes from Millstone. The Empty Box Brook goes through Roosevelt. The Assunpink Creek goes through Millstone and onto Stone or Rising Sun Lake, and then that comes out. Into the Assunpink. The blockage is between where all the creeks meet and the Assunpink. So that becomes a Winkler and DEP thing. He's got to check that out. 4 or 5 years ago, they put the Beaver Deceiver in, and everything was fine. We didn't have a water rise and stuff like that. But I believe the beavers were so happy that they made more beavers and made more beavers. And now what's happening is they've migrated upstream. And upstream is our creeks. It's our creeks all the way up to North Valley Road and the bike path. Okay, so we have the Assunpink, and that's part of the beaver problem, and the state might resolve that without us. Up here, there's at least one tree on the east side of the bike path. It's about a 50-foot tree, and the beavers are halfway through it now, right near their lodge, which is on the east side. It's like they've made a little condominium for themselves. And so the water's coming up there. But if that tree falls, it'll fall probably, I think, onto the power lines. Steve said maybe it'll go the other way. But we got in touch with JCP&L about the pole with the transformer, that of the wire. So they're going to check that out. So then the rest of the, what's now a lake almost, a pond on either side of the bike path, that's Roosevelt's problem. So the environmental committee should make a determination before the beaver guy gets that far upstream.
The Environmental Commission meets tomorrow night, if I'm not mistaken.
You guys should talk about this, because
We could discuss that.
The Assunpink, I don't think we can do anything about. That's them, and they will do what the state environmental DEP considers appropriate. Over here, that's us, and I know from going there almost every day, people are enthralled by these beavers. I mean, I think the class takes trips. The third grade goes there to, oh, look at the beavers. I think they're going to start naming them soon. I grew up on a farm, and I was told not to name the chickens and the ducks.
You know what happens? If it doesn't have a name, it's food. It's dinner.
It's dinner for dinner. That's my daughter sent me a card that says that. Yeah. But, yeah, so it's kind of up to us, and if the environmental committee meets, then, you know, whatever we decide to do, and that's so Winkler and the beaver guy are going to be down that way, and they'll work their way upstream. But keep in mind that we had no beaver problem here until the Beaver Deceiver, and apparently
we didn't. We went many years without.
Well, yeah, but we had the rise of the water around the sewer plant, similar to what it is now. Yeah. So they're going to have to do something to fix that, but the beaver population exploded, and they just moved upstream. And upstream, as far as they can go, is the bike path.
I think all the whole animal population exploded here, because I think the more they've developed Millstone and Monroe and East Windsor, everyone knows they have a safe haven here. I mean, we have thousands of chipmunks that we never had. I mean,
well,
I think the animal population
deers
exploded.
Are all over the place here.
You hear the
shotguns in the woods, and the deers are in our yards.
Yeah, the whole animal population exploded.
But
I'm going to ask,
are all these animals buying houses?
No, they're making lodges for themselves.
The school population will really.
Yeah,
so I'm
going to
ask kind of a dumb
down.
Question.
Yeah.
So if we leave the beavers be, which seems like that's the most ecologically sound thing to do, is it? I mean, these trees that they're cutting down are kind of in the water. Is there a way to replace them? Can we plant new trees?
Well, what's happening also is that when the water rises because of their dam, like over on the
bike path, I know their root.
Then they chop the trees down that are on the shore,
right.
And they fall in, and they use those to raise the dam. At some point, if they keep it up the way they're doing it, the water is going to come up to the bike path.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
At that point, we'll have to think about.
But I just wondered,
since they've
taken down so many trees, is there a way to replace them at all?
But they eventually leave, believe it or not.
Well, like we met Lou, remember the gypsy moths for a few years?
Yep.
There was a nightmare here. Right. There were no leaves on any trees. And they were, every tree trunk was black because they were just covered. I don't know if you were here yet, Mike. It was disgusting. Right. And the tree trunks were just covered in black fur. You came in, they were on you, they were on your dog. There were, they decimated the trees. People, we had more people at the council meetings about that. Yeah, I wasn't on the council then. I came as a resident. But then they have like a 7-year cycle or something? Yeah. Or
3-year cycle.
The 3-year, right, because I was going to say I knew it was the 7 years here. Sure. And then they moved on and never came back.
Now, if you go to Vermont.
Where?
In Vermont.
Of Vermont.
Or Maine. Mm-hmm. My wife has family there, so I can tell you from firsthand. There are dams that have no beavers, but the dams are there.
The beaver
dams. They build them and eventually they leave. And they go elsewhere.
There's hunters.
I think it's because the outhouses get full.
I think a lot of hunters in Maine also. They don't care about tree hugging.
There are rules. There are rules about how you do that. By the same token, they what they do is they dynamite them.
My question to the council is, you know, this guy is scheduled to come out next week.
Mm-hmm.
And possibly move upstream, and he could go up to Solar Village.
He'll start downstream because he was in Allentown, then he was in Cream Ridge, then he'll show up at the Assinpink and work his way.
But east. Do we need to have some sort of action to either hold them off until we research it more on the Environmental Commission or and the council, or you know, do we need to take some action tonight on this? I don't know.
Well, I think it seems. To cancel Brandon for now?
Well, who knows when he'll be
available. This is such different information than what we previously...
Well, he should do the Assinpink. That's written on the wall by the state. When you speak, you should speak to Winkler from DEP, from the Assinpink, and maybe let him know that town is a little hesitant about taking the beavers out of over here, over at the bike pit.
But where do we want to draw the line?
Yeah, and then next month, if
do you think they're separate groups?
And you've got more water. And
yeah, I know.
You're flooding I'm saying that.
Okay, I see a couple of safety issues. One is that tree, and JCP&L is working on it, and it's about a 14, 15 foot trunk, and it's chewed halfway through in the past week, just a little over a week. They're halfway through it. So JCP&L will look at that. The other issue is it's rising, and Mary Tullis knows because she's wanted to put marks there, but the water is rising over at the bike path. So that's...
I can ask Winkler if they can hold off until we research it more.
Tell them you're meeting with the Environmental Committee, and so we don't meet again for 2 weeks.
February
6th? That's 3 weeks, actually.
Because January is a long month.
So I don't know. Talk to Winkler and maybe.
But I want to get a sense of the whole.
And can you talk to the Environmental Commission?
I want to get a sense of the whole council.
Yeah, I'd say hold off until you wait on.
Till we research a little more.
And can you talk to them about if it's physically possible to replace some of it, to plant some new trees? Just so that we have ongoing.
If you think that we can tolerate the existence of them being here till we. Resolve it through through Mr. Winkler or whoever.
Well, that would be Brandon's schedule.
I would go for that.
Yeah. Brandon's schedule.
You probably have to do something to protect the trunks, but you can do that. Take the PVC pipe, you split it in half.
Oh, yeah.
So they can't gnaw their way through any new trees. As he was saying, what they typically do is they keep going until they deplete the resources, and then they move on.
Yeah.
So
that's right.
What they do,
The outhouse gets full.
The bike path just looks so different now than it used to. I mean, it's not... It looks like Planet of the Apes.
But we have entertainment there now.
It's true. a fright movie.
So if the council approves, I can contact Peter Winkler and ask him if they could postpone this until we discuss it further. Yeah. Run it by the Environmental
Commission. At least the bike path.
Get the Environmental Commission's advice on it,
right.
et cetera.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good. then I'm not the bad guy anymore.
No. Like you're not the bad, you're not the hit man.
Yeah, you call the beaver just a beaver killer guy.
Right.
You know,
so.
Call the dogs off.
But Steve, that's a good idea about putting.
Yeah, I was thinking like a mesh fence or something, but that's not fence.
Yeah, well, and they do that to protect young trees and
in
tree farms and that all the time.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, seems like a viable option to me. Mm-hmm. Like a great. Good idea. Because I'd like to see more trees there. I mean, it just...
Yeah. So I'll ask Ellen, who's the new president.
Listen, we lost a whole forest back there when the floods got flooded because the creek wasn't running again.
Right. Well, started a little bit with Sandy and then just...
My opinion on what happened over there was when they did construction in Millstone.
Well, that's a lot.
They didn't put the silt fences there all the silt from washing down into our creek.
Yeah. That's exactly
and
what happened.
And then it just silted and silted and silted, and there you have it.
I saw it every day. I used to walk there with my dog.
Yeah, everything's Millstone's fault. That's why we have crazy islands here. We have foxes.
No, but is there any way that's standard construction procedure now is when you're on a hillside that you stop the washing?
Yeah, always. It has been for quite some time.
Skunk cabbage was the only thing that was there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really, stumped, really, to me, I mean, it's still kind of beautiful, but it's very sad what's happened to
it. Dresden. Right?
And my bullfrog.
Yeah.
He was there.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
We're going to go on to unfinished business.
So, Mike, that's on you now.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to bring up the speed hump. When I read Ms. Burkhart's letter, I was really, it's just amazing to me that there could be two sides to every issue. Because at first I was thinking, like, what could be wrong with speed humps other than people who speed and hit them? Why, you know, otherwise, why would anyone be opposed to speed humps? But I felt that her letter was very compelling and made a lot of good points.
I have something to add to her letter, if you'd like.
Pardon me?
I have a personal experience. If you'd like, I can add.
Well,
to
I'll just say this like first. Experience. That so because she had mentioned the first responders with ambulances and fire trucks, right. So I contacted the captain of the Millstone's fire and first aid, and I asked him to read her letter, and he said that every one of her points was. Valid, like very valid. He said that first responders despise speed humps. And he went into a little more detail than Claire did as far as like how much time you lose by coming to a complete stop, or if by some chance you don't come to a complete stop and then it damages, right? Also, if you hit a speed hump, everybody in the ambulance, whether it's the patient, the driver, the EMTs attending to them, gets jolted, same thing in the fire trucks. He wrote, I have a text from him, but basically he just corroborated everything that was in Ms. Burkhart's letter. He said in Millstone, they have no speed humps at all. They don't, because they're more detrimental than they are beneficial.
Right.
There's one road where they put it in about 25 years ago, and that's it. And then they won't put any more in. He also brought up a point that was not in the letter, which is that they also are frowned upon because of snow plows. He said when the snow plow comes through, they don't know where the humps are. So they smash into it. It damages the plow, and frequently it's very jolting to the driver of the snow plow because he hits it hard, or she, and really gets jolted. And he said that, they've had whiplash, they've had all kinds of things because they have no idea where the snow plow is. And so he said it's really detrimental to the plow itself and
don't
to the driver.
Hmm? Don't they have signs for speed humps?
They put markers on the side like a red
But they're required to put signs.
But maybe at night when it's snowing, they're hard to see.
Yeah,
Right.
The blizzard.
Yeah, so...
And they're also listen, when you're doing plus snow plow, you're watching the snow, the plow, not what's on the side of the road.
Yeah. So
you're watching cars that might be parked, so you don't.
That's right.
Exactly.
Right. That's exactly right.
Yeah, you're looking everywhere, but you're not really looking for signs.
The humps on farm, the new humps, are much more reasonable than the ones on.
And they're still uncomfortable. I live there.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, but they're saying is they don't like humps.
Period.
At all. Yeah, period. Yeah. So I thought that we should look into alternatives before we make a decision.
I have one more to tell you.
Go ahead.
When I retired, I decided to be a school bus driver.
I remember.
And there's a development in East Windsor that put in all kinds of speed bumps and nasty ones. And we were getting bounced around. I mean, and we first of all, we used to lose almost 10 minutes on a route. And that's a lot for a school bus because we have to be on time. People are waiting for the kids. Right. The phone ring starts ringing in the office. Where's my kid? What'd you do with him? You know, I'd like to do something with some of them. But nevertheless, and the bus gets jostled, the kids get jostled, and interestingly enough, if the wheels are not exactly straight, the bus used to do not only this and this, but this and this. And the kids used to, some of them would even scream. So we decided to tell our bus
supervisor?
Huh?
Supervisor?
No, well, supervisor, bus supervisor, yes. And she took a bus out and drove it by herself to look at it. Called up East Windsor and told them either those things could disappear in 3 days or we are not going into that development. And the second day it was when they were gone.
Really?
Of course. Then, you know why? Then the parents have to walk the kids for 7 blocks to get to the corner
used to walk 5 miles to school uphill in the snow.
Barefoot.
Back and forth. Barefoot. Right. Thank you. Yeah.
Well,
look what happened to me.
That's right.
I mean, we know we have a severe problem with speeders here. I mean, it's out of control. Way worse on 571, but there's not a lot we can do about that. But certainly on our local streets, I just think we should explore the alternatives. And before we make a decision,
it's funny.
Well, she does mention.
The speed tables.
Yeah. I don't know what that is. I can't picture that.
I have a little experience with speed tables.
I was going to ask you if you
can. Yeah, because we put some in Long Branch a few years ago. And they do work.
Can you explain what that is, Steve? Because I don't really know
they'll usually do them at intersections, which is very common because they incorporate them with like a raised crosswalk. But the real thing is if with that kind of passive device, if it's not obnoxious and it doesn't jolt you, it doesn't do any good.
That's right.
So you're either putting up with, you know, and I see a lot of towns putting in a lot of extra striping and striping for bike lanes, and nobody pays a bit of attention to anything. You know, I was working up on Livingston Avenue in New Brunswick the other day. Beautiful. Bike lanes straight down the road. Everybody rides on the sidewalk. You know,
it's safer.
It's not safer if you're walking.
Well, that's right.
But, so, you know, it's kind of, and it's classic argument. They're 100% true about, you know, emergency people. We were doing the speed tables in Long Branch. We had the whole road closed, and the police department were out there doing traffic for us, and they loved them until we opened the road up. And then after we started ripping oil pans out of cars and whatnot, then they learned to hate them.
So on a speed table, you'll scrape the bottom?
Well, depending on how severe they are. The ones that they hired a very expensive landscape architect from Boston to design them, and we ended up having to actually stretch out the approaches to make them less severe. But they're still there. But you know, even in town, you'll see the difference. The speed bumps that are on Pine Drive were built the old way. They basically just mounded up the asphalt on top of the old road.
Yeah.
there's a couple speed bumps on Lake that were built the same way.
That's right. They're,
and then there's a couple that
low and high.
The company decided to try to do them with the paver all in one shot rather than build them after. And they you hardly even notice them. They don't work at all.
On Lake?
Yeah,
I think I know which one they are.
So a couple further up Lake where they just decided to raise the paver up and drop it back down. And pavers don't really work that way. When you change grades of the paver, it takes a little room to get them to move. But the ones over here that we just built on Farm Lane are kind of built to the current standard where they're actually keyed down into the pavement. So when you first hit them, they're not as steep coming in because you don't have a 2-inch lip right at the beginning. And they work and they're a little less obnoxious than the ones that are built the old way. And, there's four different shapes that they've been playing with. They've got a trapezoidal shape. There's a circular curve, a parabolic curve, and a sinusoid curve, and really none of them really get built that way anyhow because asphalt doesn't work like that. they throw it down, they rake it out, and hope for the best.
Would that still impede the new shapes or the less severe ones on farm? Would that still affect the first responders?
As I said, if it doesn't give you a jolt, people ignore them. They fly right over them anyhow. So, it's really,
not effective on Farm Lane. Listen, I hear them, I see them, and even my wife tonight, we were talking, I mentioned it, she says, what's on the agenda? And I said, we're going to discuss speed bumps. She says, they don't work. Just stand out in mine on my patio, in the front patio, and watch them. They go by like shot from guns.
Well, especially now, so many people have huge SUVs and vans and pickup trucks with those gigantic tires that they don't even feel it.
Now, if we do decide that we want them, one suggestion that I have is the engineer that we're working with a lot up in North Brunswick, he has a striping scheme that he does on his detail, and Aberdeen uses the same engineer, where a 100 or 200 feet in front of the speed bump, they start out with a short line and then a wider one, and they kind of spread out as you go to give you some warning before you get to it. But, as I say, it's a classic argument. Then there's some rubber-type mats that have gaps in between that allow emergency vehicles, but then you end up with a problem. People trying to get between those gaps anyhow. So
let me ask you a question. Who do we think is the real problem people in regard to speeding? Is it people who are just not thinking about it? Their mind might be elsewhere, and so they're just flying down the street? Or is it people who really don't give a damn and they're I'm going
to
accelerate?
I hate to say this,
I can tell you there's one gray car that doesn't give a damn.
This, but I think it's mostly everyone who lives here either a long time or is a real part of the community knows, and they go slowly.
Yeah.
And then you get, and I'm not saying it's just new people because it's not, because I know for a fact someone in town who really speeds and he was born and raised here, but it's mostly, I think, they don't care. I have stood out in the street like a lunatic so many times, practically going in front of the car, because I hear it coming behind me or in front of me, and I stand there. And every once in a while, they'll slow down because they think I need help or I want something. And I say, it's 25 here. Please slow down. They don't have sidewalks. I can't even finish my neighbor. Oh, I thought you were in trouble. Okay. I think it's the people who do it. I don't think anything will deter them. Not speed humps, not signs, not flashing lights.
Right.
If you're the type of person where you live here or you are here frequently as a visitor, whatever, and you see we don't have sidewalks. People walk in the street and they ride their bikes and they walk. walk their dogs and you have kids and they're going to fly down the street, I don't think anything will deter those.
You know, the ones that determine how fast they're going.
Yeah, we have two of them here.
Yeah. You know, you can hear.
Especially the people on 571 know that we don't have police. So they just go. Kathleen and I have left here late, like as late as 9, 10 o'clock at night, and we'll stand walking outside to go to our cars. I mean, especially that time of night, because they know there's no police, there's no, and they just fly. They just fly down. It's like, oh, it's scary.
Last meeting, you remember it was raining and there was mist and the fog?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I went out to my cars, but I parked right in the front here. I have privileges. I park right in the front here. And I walked out. As soon as I got out the car, you can't see where the hell you were going.
Yeah.
Came by like I...
Yeah. Yeah, there's a difference between who's driving on 571 and who's driving on our local streets. Yeah.
And it's really bad when 571 is closed for some reason and they divert traffic.
Oh, we've been through that.
That's
yeah.
What really
yeah,
gets crazy.
That's really yeah. bad. And I worry a lot about Adventure Crossing when that fully opens. I did meet with the traffic engineers, and they were very amenable to helping us with signage. That since GPS sends everyone through Roosevelt now, you know, with signage to get to Great Adventure. I didn't even know about Adventure Crossing when I met with them. Maybe I did, but and then also with our school. But when I contacted them, it was sort of like, yeah, things move slowly. Don't worry, you're on our list. But I actually was optimistic and naive enough to think that when I first met with them, that by September we would have new signage for the school and new lights. But no, it's months later, and they said we are on the list. They haven't forgotten us. But
I had something also. I wrote to them. We had the meeting. Remember that one time with the lady?
Oh, yeah, she's not there anymore.
She retired.
She retired. And the
Thank
new
God people, she's not.
Well, then, yes, and the new people who are in charge are very sympathetic to us. We were outside. I mean, you all know me. I can't handle cold weather. It was so cold that day in March. I was like, it was so cold, and we were outside for hours looking at all of our intersections in the school. And I was telling them how people get lost. They follow GPS, and as soon as they get to the big hill, they think they made a mistake because they're going to Great Adventure, and they just slam on the brakes, and they either like fly down Tamara, or they went past the intersection and they fly down Brown Street or up. So they were very, and then we also looked at the school and they were very understanding, and they said our signage is so old.
That's right.
Actually, there were two signs for where 571 continues. You know how long I've lived here? I never even noticed them. They're like this big. They're hidden in the bushes. They noticed them. They were like, okay, we're going to give you. They can't give us a sign that says Great Adventure this way. But they named everything they were going to do, which is like big yellow lines showing you that 571 continues to the left. You know, go make a left here. All kinds of signage to get you to Great Adventure. And then much, because I told them that everyone ignored the new culture. People ignore the 25 miles an hour school zone, lights flashing, morning and afternoon. They've clipped the crossing guards.
Yeah.
And I think I told you a few weeks ago, a man almost ran me over. He was so angry that I was going 25. So they said, no, there's much different signage now. And this was at the end of March, and I was thinking, oh, 6 months, we'll have this, well. And they're very nice, and they're very sympathetic to our plight.
What they did do is at that intersection, they put a counter there.
Yeah.
Not just
well,
cars,
one of the,
how many go straight, how many go
well,
this way,
when I told them
way.
How bad that yeah. intersection is,
yeah.
I told you this, I told everyone this when I met with them. What was the first question they asked me? How many deaths have you had here?
That's right.
I said none. And
that's the regular traffic scheme.
Yeah, that's right. And I said many near accidents, but no, thank God, no deaths. But then that drops us down immediately from a priority.
Exactly. Maybe our focus should be on how to protect pedestrians rather than trying to limit these speeders. You know, try to find some way to really protect pedestrians by having walking paths and some sort of barriers, perhaps.
Well, that's what it says in Claire's letter.
Right. All sidewalks, the
different,
right?
Yeah, sidewalks.
I mean, let's face it, we're not going to be able to put sidewalks in the whole town.
Maybe our focus, because this seems like a no, you can't win with.
Exactly, it's a no-win situation. I was surprised how vehement the fire captain was in Millstone. He's like, we hate speed humps. And then he went on and on and on, mirroring everything and more.
But that's our goal, right, is to protect pedestrians.
Of course,
mainly.
Yeah.
So maybe we could focus on that.
You know, I wrote a letter to an email to that lady after we spoke. I've asked a couple of times now to put up the sign coming into Roseville, use your turn signal, because there have been fatalities on that corner, Ely's corner.
Ely's. Yeah. I was talking about Tamara.
No, but I'm talking about
Ely's. Ely's, yeah.
We've had fatalities, and every so often there's a nasty, and those accidents are nasty when people are really moving along.
In Princeton.
Never ignored us completely.
Well, she retired. She's no longer there. And I believe...
She should have been shot before she retired.
I met with four of the engineers, and they were very, very
well. Add that to your list.
We are on their radar.
Add that to your list, because it'll help.
What, Ely's Corner?
And Ely's, just before you get into Ely's Corner. Use
turn signal.
Turn signal.
Did you want to ask?
Yeah. In Princeton, in some of the...
In coursework.
There are some.
Yeah.
There are signs all around.
And that's not a county road. Use your signal.
I
can... When I finally hear from them again, I can definitely bring that up.
In Princeton, in the more affluent side... if you try to go through, what they do is they put plants or something in the center of
traffic
the road.
Traffic calmers, calmers.
Yeah. Right. And they have to go, you have to stop. You have to go around slowly on either side. So, I mean, you could do that in front of the post office.
Yeah, they actually...
Okay, you could do it. If you really want to stop it on 571.
We have to ask the county permission.
County
we can't touch that. They would have to approve it. I can't say for sure, but I have a feeling they would not be. They have that in Manhattan also, on First Avenue now. They have actual, as busy as it is, they have planters. You have to go slowly around them. But here, we have no control over 571. It's completely up to the county.
Rick Prester, in front of his house, took a plant, a nice banana plant, and a sign, put it in the middle of the street, and it worked.
More and more I see kind of modified roundabouts that they put in, so you have to go around.
That's what I always wished we could have in front of the school, in front of the post office.
And if you look at these different sites that deal with traffic calming, like the one that she has in her letter, they do suggest, you know, measures like that rather than having a vertical.
I think they work.
There's a few of those in Princeton, but they're like paved out.
Manhattan too. But
you kind of end up with what happens now. People slow down to get there, and then they jam on the gas.
I mean, we can ask the county. I can't imagine they would give us permission, but
we can't do anything like that. Like Pine is not enough roof. There's not enough space to do.
We just. Could just do it.
And
like
besides,
if
people were swerving,
up on your lawn.
End up somewhere else.
So can we look in, let's just try to research whatever alternatives there are before we make any decisions.
Safety is
Bob.
Yep.
Yeah.
Isaac.
Isaac used to.
He's a traffic engineer for Manhattan.
Right.
So,
I met with Isaac many times, and actually so did my sister, because my sister teaches travel skills to blind people. She's out on the streets with them, teaching them how to walk down a street, take a bus, everything with a cane, you know, blind people or severely visually impaired. And so she and Isaac met quite a few times about, even though he was in Manhattan, she's a little more. 30 miles north of Manhattan, in Rockland County, and then I would talk to Isaac about it, and No, we are limited on 571, but at least we could try to figure out what to do on our own.
The theme of tonight's meeting is that everything is more complicated
than the surface, on the surface.
Whether
exactly.
it's beavers or speed humps, whatever. Just,
there's
you know,
two sides. I mean, here we think we're going to remove the beavers. Nope, we shouldn't do that. Here I'm thinking, well, who could argue with speed humps? Well, many people.
There's
many,
no right answer.
There's a, yeah, there's, it's yeah. no win.
I had a business in New York, and we shipped heavy cases like this size. And whenever we put them on the back of a box truck, we'd have to insist that it went near the cab, never over the wheels. Because when it was over the wheels, no matter who the driver was, the wheels on our cart would get broken because of the smashing up and down. So it's a real thing. I can see why the fire department.
Yeah, it's a real thing, and it's a no-win situation.
Are we not going to have Roberts Engineering do anything?
Not yet. Yes. Right. Let's research the alternatives.
Right. Okay.
That's not on the agenda.
When is when's Pine scheduled to be paved?
It's
24.
That's so we have plenty of time to decide this.
Never say
well,
that.
Well, okay, but it doesn't have
24, is it one more year?
No, I mean,
she'll be planning.
She's
going
to have to go out 6 months.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I know, but I just meant, like, it doesn't have to be by the next meeting that we have to make a decision.
No, but I'm saying
March. Okay,
March. Because it happens fast.
Oh, no, I know. I just meant, like, it's not like Bob needs to have all this information for us by the next meeting.
Right. So. You know, this reminds me of my synagogue. We have 7 people with 8 opinions.
Exactly.
There's not 20 opinions.
Well,
okay.
That's why you have a million.
But I really want to thank you for your letter because, honestly, I don't believe any of us were aware of the pitfalls of humps. You know, I think we all thought,
Carmel, she said, here's what gave a recommendation.
Right. But that's because we asked her.
Right, I know.
That was based on the... it was predicated on the fact that we wanted more humps.
Right.
Okay, does anyone else have
Did anybody forward the letter to her?
Pardon me?
Did you forward that letter to her?
Claire's letter?
I asked her to read it. I don't know if she did.
She should get
it. I told her about it.
I think that'll wake her up.
I did not. I forwarded it to Millstone's Fire and First Aid.
Doesn't she listen to the...
meeting,
I forwarded it to Carmella and to Millstone Fire and First Aid.
So Maureen is listening to the minutes.
So I'll put this on again, unfinished business, the first meeting in March, if you have.
Okay.
Sure.
Sounds good. Okay. No, March. No, to give them time.
We'll start. And if you have anything, forward it to me and I'll send it out.
If you have a meeting, Bob, do you want to discuss beavers?
Add it all.
Why don't we dump it all on your committee?
You can add them to the amphitheater, too. Right. All right, does anyone else have any old business they'd like to discuss? Okay. Come to new business.
Okay.
First item is the use of the barrel hall. Request for use of the barrel hall for a birthday party on February 4th.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
From 10 a.m. to 10 p.m.
Move it.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Use of the barrel hall for Tai Chi classes for 2023. I don't need to read them. It's Tai Chi for the rest of the year.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, and then finally, a request for the use of the barrel hall for a family celebration on January 29th. From noon to
9.
I'll
move it.
Second?
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. I'm just going to throw this out here. In case you wonder, does anyone listen to the meetings? I asked Claire and Rich how they knew about this speed hump, and she said, they listened to the meetings when they were on Zoom, and then, once we dispense with Zoom, so they listen on the website, actually. So... some residents are actually listening.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, we already had our public comment on any item, so I'm going to adjourn. Does I mean, motion to adjourn?
Yes. No legal stuff that we have to deal with.
There's nothing to make.
God bless you.
Motion to adjourn?
Move to adjourn.
Second. Is that Lou?
That was Lou.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
So don't forget, we won't see each other until February 6th.
All right, time out, 8:39.
And in case anyone wants to know, even though it's only the 6th, 17th, but this is the first January in the history of weather record keeping that there hasn't been any snow at all. Yeah, the first time in history.
Don't jinx it.
I like snow. I think it's the only good thing about winter. Yeah. It's the only thing that makes winter bearable.